all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News. It's a Friday morning, February 24th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zommers is back down in our Madison studio. And coming up this hour, attacking the watchdogs. Now that the landmark protection for women's healthcare rights, Roe v. Wade, has been repealed, what's to stop a rogue activist right-wing Supreme Court from ripping away more landmark protections? What's to stop a governor of a right-wing state from trying to do the same from a different perspective at the state level? Well, those things are in the works as we speak. In one case, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is taking steps to throw out long-held legal protections for reporters, especially those who are uncovering corruption, threats against democracy, and frankly, just other bad actions like what might be taken by the governor of Florida. So we will talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor for the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, about the dangers of powerful politicians being able to intimidate or even silence a free press. We are going to check in with weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Vichitsky and find out the forecast for the weekend. It's a very cold morning up here on Lake Wissota, but we'll see how things look for the rest of the weekend and into the start of next week. And our guest sportscaster on Fridays is UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher, who will join us to talk more about what the weekend's going to be like in sports, whether Giannis is going to return to the Bucks as they come back from the All-Star break starting tonight, and we'll look at what the Marquette and Badger men's basketball teams are up to this weekend as well. If you'd like to give us a call, tell us what's on your mind, comment on any of the topics that we've covered today, or bring up something fresh, the main studio line is 844-967-2789, and the Up North line is 715-388-7155. They both go to the same place. We just added a 715 number because sometimes we have a couple of different shows at once going on the network. And so whether it's at Bow Falls Radio, maybe the Chad Holmes Show, or some of the other things that we do, we might need that separate line. So we've got it up north, 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com, and use upnorthnewswi, don't forget the WI, if you're looking for us on social media. So again, we appreciate you checking in with everything that Up North News does. We put a story on there yesterday, summing up some of the reaction to the passing of former Governor Tony Earl as well, and plenty of feature stories to help get you started on the weekend. Milwaukee is going to be the scene of the Republican National Convention in 2024. That much we already knew, but we have also learned that Milwaukee will be the site of the first Republican presidential debate of the 2024 election season, and that's going to happen this August. That was announced yesterday by the Republican National Committee. The rough time and location were the only details finalized as a small group of RNC members met behind closed doors in Washington this week to begin the complicated task of coordinating logistics for what is likely to be a crowded and messy primary season. In the coming weeks, the group plans to finalize a broader set of criteria for participation, possibly including the requirement that each candidate on stage must pledge to support the Republican Party's eventual nominee. Once upon a time, that would have been considered a slam dunk. But the Republican Party today is fractured like never before. Just witness here closer to home, where you had two conservatives running for state Supreme Court, and you did not have both candidates pledging to support the other, depending on who came out of the primary. And a lot of folks who backed Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Doro, thinking that fellow conservative Dan Kelly, the former justice, couldn't possibly win in April, now have a decision to make whether to, you know, unite and give a more full-throated endorsement, or will they, you know, simply hold their tongue and see if Kelly can win this time after losing to Jill Karofsky back in 2020. Now, there are three high-profile Republicans who have launched White House bids already, but as many as a dozen are ultimately expected to enter the 2024 contest, and they are, shall we say, being nuanced about whether they will live up to that pledge to support the eventual nominee. And that includes Donald Trump himself. Nikki Haley, former South Carolina governor, talks about how it's time for a new generation of leadership. Trump has said it would depend on who the nominee was. Former Maryland governor Larry Hogan said he won't commit to supporting Trump. New Hampshire governor Chris Sununu said he'll support the eventual nominee, but he's certain it won't be Trump. Former Arkansas governor Asa Hutchinson has also not decided whether to sign the pledge. So yes, there will be a debate here in August, but you know, no matter what the debate format, I think we all know what the very first question is going to be. Let's take a break and have some more headlines coming up on this Friday morning. This is Up North News Radio. It is a Friday morning, 7:15. We're heading into the weekend, talking more about stories that are in the news in just a bit. But first, we're going to get a feel for what we have on tap for our forecast. And to do that, we have to check in, as we do this time every morning, with meteorologist Jennifer Vichitsky. But I have to first hit her up with something that's not exactly weather related, but we didn't talk much about this on Tuesday. Oftentimes we do that on Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, you're liable to have punchkies. And I saw a social media post from the young meteorologist that apparently says she makes her own punchkies. Is this true, Jennifer?
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
That is amazing. And vegan too, I see.
Yeah, I'm vegan. So I have, I'm also 100% Polish. So I grew up eating them and made my own recipe for it.
God bless you. I mean, my old Polish grandmother would be so happy to hear all this right now. Nice. I'm glad we're definitely going to have to set up a cooking baking segment later, because I want to hear more about this. But we're not only getting over this weekend storm here, but we were talking quite a bit in the last hour about how San Diego got its first ever blizzard warning up in the mountains. It's just crazy, all the weather that's happening out here. And it's a cold morning here on Lake Wissota. So with all of that as a setup, what would you like to tell us about the weekend weather picture around the Badger State?
Yeah, I mean, with the system that came through yesterday, we have that low pressure system that pushed through. So overall, for essentially the entire state today, it's going to be a bit on the cooler side, a little bit below average as well. The entire state should be right around about the mid to lower 30s, maybe upper 30s, a little bit farther towards the south, towards the border. Other than that, though, it looks like not too much happening, maybe a few scattered areas with some snowfall here for the evening hours here for tonight. So something to keep in mind, especially if you are traveling for the weekend. If you get a little bit farther towards the central portions of the state and the western, and a little bit farther to the north as well, anywhere between Oshkosh to Wausau to Amory to Ashland, looking at about maybe 1 to 2 inches of extra snowfall possible here for tonight. And then it looks like a pretty decent weekend ahead. So tomorrow, it actually looks like a warm front will begin to push through the area, and we're looking at sunny skies throughout the entire state here Saturday, both Saturday and for Sunday. And it looks like temperatures for the most part are going to be either at slight or slightly below average here for your Saturday. But again, we're going to be seeing a pretty decent increase in temperatures as that warm front comes into the area Sunday. A beautiful day for everyone. Definitely want to take advantage of another day of sun and actually getting up above average. And it looks like areas are expecting to be getting even into the 40s here for the southern portion of the state, Madison, Waukesha, Milwaukee, and then lingering in the mid to upper 30s here for every other part of the state, maybe into the upper 20s around Iron River and closer to the border of the UP. So if you are traveling this weekend, it's a great weekend to do it. Just be careful with all the snow that everyone got. But the next chance for some wet weather comes in, maybe in the form of some snow and freezing rain coming in Sunday night into the start of the work week next week. But actually, it looks like a really decent weekend coming up ahead.
All right, Jennifer. Yeah, it's weird to say after moving a foot of snow off my driveway, but it really does have that, you know, spring isn't far away feel to it out there. And so I appreciate hearing those notes in the forecast. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks so much. You too. Enjoy it.
All right. And, you know, Aaron, we were talking before about the blizzard warnings out in Southern California, something that they've never had to deal with before. But I will say that having to move that foot of snow off my driveway with a relatively new snowblower, so it's got a nice, you know, smooth blade down at the bottom. It hasn't been all dinged up yet. And a resurfaced driveway and some light, fluffy snow. That was as close as a knife through butter situation that I could ever want. And just helps me, you know, if it would have been a long, hard slog, I'd probably be all sick of winter now. But after that, I'm like, okay, there's only one or two more of these left. Hopefully, maybe.
I was going to say, that sounds effortless.
It was almost until, of course, you get to the end where the snowplow does what the snowplow does. And we haven't named the snowplows up here in the town of Eagle Point in Chippewa County. So we don't have the names that you were telling us about last hour in Madison, the new names for the snowplows, Snowby One Kenobi.
Yeah, there's no endearing Seymour pavement to make you feel less terrible about your driveway being blocked up.
And what was the prime one?
Saltimus Prime.
And then Saltimus Prime.
Dolly Plowton was the other.
Dolly Plowton. We don't have that. We have Earl. We just have Earl. Earl, you know, plows the town roads, and then you've got to, you know, scoop up everything that he leaves at the end of the driveway, and we just have to deal with it. But like I said, one day closer to spring, one day closer to the first spring training game for the Brewers. They're playing the Dodgers tomorrow. I even have a time that was in front of me here at one point, because I actually went and put the Brewers schedule on my Google calendar, just so I would have something to look forward to. And there I see it now, 2:10 tomorrow is when it starts. So even if I don't watch it or hear it, just to know that it's there, you know, is a big deal. It just makes me very happy. If you missed it in the last hour, I'll just touch on briefly that former governor, Tony Earle, passed away yesterday at the age of 86 after suffering a stroke over the weekend. Tony Earle was the state's 41st governor. He served from the 1982 election to the 1986 election, where he was unseated by Republican Tommy Thompson. Previously, he'd served in the state assembly, had been majority leader for a time, then worked in the administrations of Governors Patrick Lucey, Martin Schreiber, and Lee Dreyfus, served as secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. A celebration of life date is still pending. But again, former Governor Tony Earle has passed away at age 86. Governor Tony Evers has announced that flags will fly at half staff in the state of Wisconsin through March 3rd, and then again on the day of his celebration of life. In a case of politicians not behaving nearly as honorably, we're going to talk for just a second about the tradition in the U.S. Senate that has gotten in the way of some awfully good people being able to serve as federal judges. Now, Democrats at this point have already helped appoint 100 judicial confirmations, new judges during the Joe Biden presidency. But to make more happen, they are going to have to flirt with ending a century-long Senate practice known as the blue slip. And it's got people in both parties saying we need to kill this or don't kill it because it could have ramifications. It dates back to at least 1917, where the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee sends a blue-colored form, a blue slip, to the senators representing the home state of a judicial nominee. A blue state returned with a positive response signals the senator's approval of moving forward with a nomination hearing. But if the blue slip comes back with a negative response or is not returned at all, that means the home state senator objects, which can doom the nomination. And you would ask yourself, what kind of a jerk would do that? If a good person has been nominated from your home state, has passed through all kinds of evaluations, has been appointed by the President of the United States, and you have this tradition where home state senators essentially, you know, give their blessing unless there's something really untoward about this nominee, why would you get in the way of that? Which takes us to Senator Ron Johnson, of course, the Wisconsin Republican, who abruptly decided to block a nomination for a federal judgeship, even though this is the same Senator Ron Johnson who recommended the nominee 8 months earlier. We're talking about Judge William Pocan of the Milwaukee County Circuit Court and brother to Congressman Mark Pocan. And at first, some of the excuses given either by Johnson or his associates was that, well, Judge Pocan didn't live in Green Bay where, you know, this district is. But of course, Judge Pocan offered to move, and plenty have after their appointment. Some intimated that it was something to do with a prosecutor's decision to give low bail for a domestic violence defendant who later drove his car into the Waukesha Christmas parade and killed 6 people. At least that's what Senator Johnson implied in his statement, but that accusation would be false. Judge Pocan had nothing to do with that bail decision. He was not connected to the case. Is it that he would be the first openly gay federal judge in Wisconsin? That's what his brother, Mark Pocan, charged in an interview. But in any case, by declining to return the blue slip, the nomination stalled. It expired at the end of the last Senate term in early January. And so far, the Biden administration has not renewed it. But here's the thing. The blue slip is a tradition. It's not a rule. And it's not something that the U.S. Senate was set up with, kind of like the filibuster. There is nothing that would stop the Senate Majority Leader, Dick Durbin, from ignoring Ron Johnson's lack of a blue slip and proceeding with Judge Pocan's nomination. The only barrier to that nomination is respecting this more than a century-old tradition that other senators seem to have no problem trampling on. Republicans have to accept, according to an editorial in the New York Times, the consequences of their failure to regain the Senate back in November. And it may be time for them to see the end of this, because Republicans decided to end it for appellate level judges in 2018. That's when President Donald Trump was the one who was nominating judges. And the Times notes that Republicans wanted no interference in their goal of filling the circuit courts with conservatives. And so they argue it is past time for Mr. Durbin to do so for other federal judges. And again, it is that lack of respect and lack of, frankly, honesty from Senator Ron Johnson that is bringing this entire process forward and leading to what maybe the end of a somewhat respectful tradition of nominating federal judges. And yet we get to have Mr. Ron Johnson as our senator for another 6 years. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. And while we're mostly, we're going to start by talking about the efforts by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to eliminate certain protections for reporters. There are plenty of other headlines in the news that we may get to as well, including the ongoing investigations into Donald Trump, into the big lie, and now it seems the effort to cover up the big lie, because it seems that Arizona's former attorney general at the time, a little over a year ago, launched an investigation into voting in Arizona's largest county. It took up more than 10,000 hours of staff time. There was a report that was prepared in March of 2022 stating that virtually all claims were unfounded. And then the attorney general down there in Arizona at the time, Mark Brnovich, smothered the report, kept it private. Didn't share it with anybody, especially the voters of Arizona, in order for the big lie to continue to be spread. We just continue learning more and more about what was done, what was undone, and what was hidden in the wake of the 2020 election. And we're going to continue to expose dirty tricks like this and talk more about it and much more with Mark Jacob when we come back from this break. This is Up North News for a Friday.
Fox. Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio on a Friday morning, February 24th. Nice to have you along, and I'm joined now by Mark Jacob, your former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing, Pat?
Great. Nice to have you here. I wish it were under better circumstances, but because, look, I don't have any problem week by week examining, you know, the national media. And, you know, if they're due for criticism for something, you and I are happy to give it. But that's part of the foundation of a free press, right? Not trying to intimidate, bully, or even end protections for reporters who are doing their job. And yet that's something that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is, it looks like he's trying to do. This isn't just Donald Trump, you know, saying fake news. This is the governor of a state, you know, potentially taking actions that could undermine a landmark case that defends press freedom. The case is known as New York Times versus Sullivan. So we thought we would talk a bit about the case, about what is protected, and even in our frustrations with, you know, today's media world, the importance of those protections. So I'll start, Mark, you can give some background, but maybe start first with your reaction to hearing about what the Florida governor was saying about the media.
Well, you know, obviously, people like Ron DeSantis don't want press criticism, and they're, you know, happy to intimidate anyone who stands in their way, so they go after the press. I mean, DeSantis has done a number of things. He and his backers have, you know, created kind of a fake news outlet called Florida Standard that they leak stuff to, and they're trying to, you know, set up as a real news outlet, or at least the perception of a real news outlet. Meanwhile, they're, you know, assaulting any legitimate news media that is doing kind of legitimate criticism of them. Now, the new thing is that DeSantis has proposed a new law that would make it easier for people to win libel suits against media outlets. And let me explain a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
So New York Times versus Sullivan was a 1964 case where the police commissioner of Montgomery, Alabama, L.B. Sullivan, got mad at a New York Times ad. It wasn't even a news story. It was an ad that ran in the New York Times backing Martin Luther King Jr. and criticizing the Montgomery police force for how they were handling his protests. The ad got things wrong. It said that he had been arrested 7 times. In fact, he'd been arrested 4 times. It said that police had ringed a campus of a black college when they had only like a station nearby. So that had mistakes in it. And so Sullivan, who was not named in the ad, sued. And, you know, he won in the lower courts. He won a judgment of $500,000, which is a heck of a lot of money in the 1960s. It's, you know, that's the kind of the equivalent of $5 million. Anyway, so he sues the New York Times. And by the way, just to be really clear, this was part of a trend in which the power structure in the Jim Crow South was suing news outlets whenever they criticized them. And which is interesting, because that's exactly what DeSantis would love to do. You know, what everything that's old is new again. He does what DeSantis wants to do is prevent outside news outlets and even, you know, in state news outlets from reporting critically on him. He would threaten them with lawsuits. And so New York Times versus Sullivan went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 that New York Times would not lose this lawsuit; they would win it. And they recognized that the ad was in error, but what they established was, you know, this concept that if you're a public figure or a public institution, and even if a mistake is made in a news story, that, you know, you can't sue someone for libel. And the reason they did that was because otherwise, anytime anyone made any error, they would get sued for huge amounts of money, and nobody would ever write about anyone who was rich and powerful. You know, they'd just be scared to do that. Now, they kept the standard that if you're just a private citizen who's not, you know, not a public figure, and somebody writes something totally erroneous about you, you can sue them. But what they established was that if you were a public figure or a public institution, you could not win a libel suit unless you could prove actual malice or a reckless disregard for the facts. And now, and Pat, this is showing up in the Fox News thing, because where Fox News is being sued for lying about the about the 2020 election. And because that, in that case, they pretty much established in their court filings already that there was reckless disregard for the facts and actual malice. And so Fox News is in big trouble. But the idea is that you needed to protect news outlets to be able to do legitimate good faith reporting.
And it's a freedom that is not, this isn't just some abject, notion. This isn't coming out of left field. The same Clarence Thomas who, in striking down Roe v. Wade, said there are other landmark freedoms that deserve scrutiny. Well, last June, when the Supreme Court declined to hear a defamation lawsuit brought by a Christian organization against the Southern Poverty Law Center, which had called it a hate group, Justice Clarence Thomas dissented and wrote that he would grant certiorari in this case to revisit the actual malice standard. So where, basically what we're saying about Clarence Thomas is he's killed once, he's not afraid to kill again.
Right, right, exactly. And the scary thing about the DeSantis proposed law is that it specifically says that if you accuse somebody of racism, that it's automatically considered to be a defamatory act. So you don't even have to prove that by accusing someone of racist comments or whatever, that's automatically considered defamatory and therefore actionable. And so really, Ron DeSantis is trying to kill any media oversight of his behavior is basically what's going on right now.
And there's a lot to investigate from the way that he has tried to essentially take over Disney World, to right. The way that books are being taken off of library shelves, to other people are being fired for merely disagreeing with the governor. Right. And that level of intimidation works, and it works in newsrooms too. I mean, you hate to say it, but there's more than one or two examples out there of stories, good stories that should have been told, but either, if not the reporters, the news directors, the editors, or station managers or station or newspaper attorneys said, well, you better not go any further. You're probably right on all this, but you're inviting a lawsuit and we just don't want to pay for something like that, even though you're in the right. This would only exacerbate those instances where good stories don't come to the public's attention.
Oh, big time. I mean, I was in meetings all the time with lawyers, with libel lawyers, when I was at the Tribune, and we were trying to, determine, what we could publish. And we had really good libel lawyers who would, were trying to help us get stories published. They weren't trying to keep us from publishing stories. But we had many discussions of, for example, what is a public figure? Who is a public figure? Is a public figure somebody who's been mentioned in a news story 2 times 10 years ago, or is it somebody who's in the news now? And Pat, the whole thing about public figures is that to some extent, people choose to be public figures, like you go and give speeches, if you run for public office, that kind of thing. And the Supreme Court decided that those kind of people who had decided to put themselves in the public arena deserve, had welcemed the scrutiny and kind of asked for the scrutiny, and therefore needed the news outlet needed a further protection in order to give them the scrutiny that they had, they had in effect asked for. And so this is not just, this is not news outlets picking on the little guy. Those guys still have a greater protection than, politicians who run for public office. But what Ron DeSantis wants to do, he wants politicians like himself, MAGA fascist politicians like himself, who are trying to intimidate people, to get away with it. And he wants to intimidate the press too. And you're totally right that I've been in meetings where we've discussed whether we could publish stories, and you don't always get your way. If you're an editor, sometimes the person above you will say, no, we can't risk that. And do you really want, does the general public really want more journalists saying, no, we can't risk that, we're not going to publish that fact that we know is true?
And let's keep in mind here that DeSantis and Trump and others, the excuse they're using is that, it's the little guy, the non-public figures who are being attacked and who, you know, can't prove actual malice. They keep saying this is about the little guy. No, this is about the big guys looking to intimidate the press.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of what then constitutes the press, again, that's something that I always hate to bring up the old pornography line, but, you know, it's like I know it when I see it. And that takes us to Fox, which puts the word news in its title, even though it's long been proven to be anything but. You mentioned the Dominion lawsuit where, again, there is ample evidence that this Fox cable channel is not a news network at all, but is a propaganda arm. And yet this channel, specifically one program on this channel, is now has access to 41,000 hours of surveillance video from the U.S. Capitol area on January 6th, because Republican Speaker Kevin McCarthy gave Tucker Carlson's team that exclusive access.
Right.
Can you talk about the dangers of that? It would have been tough enough if, say, if you were at the Tribune and you wanted to get access to write a story about it, there would definitely be restrictions still what you could see. But Tucker Carlson and his conspiratorial minions are getting to see the whole thing.
Right. And cherry pick. You know they're going to do that. And that there are reasons why that footage was handled very carefully by the January 6th committee, because, I mean, it shows camera angles. It may show escape routes. There are a lot of security reasons why you want to be careful how you vet that information. Being a former journalist, I'm very much for public disclosure of information whenever it can help the public make good decisions and whenever it doesn't hurt people. But we need to be careful with this kind of information. There's security implications of this. And to give it to one person just really a proven liar, and just let that person have it to cherry pick it, to find stuff that he can twist out of all the bounds of, veracity is it's just outrageous. And Pat, it is a reminder that the coup is ongoing, that it didn't stop, that they're still trying to do it, that now they're trying to rewrite the past. That's the whole thing that's so scary about the DeSantis's and the McCarthy's and all this is they've done bad things in the past, and they don't want us to know about it, and they want to pretend it didn't happen so they can do more bad things in the future. I mean, it's really pretty simple what's going on here. And I don't know what can be done about it. I mean, he is Speaker of the House, and, I don't know whether – I'm curious. To me, there's been kind of a lack of reaction by, major mainstream news media other than Fox, which
– Oh, I've thought that for 25 years. From the time that they signed on Fox News Channel, mainstream media should have been aggressive on that right away, calling out everything that they're doing and helping people see. But instead, through the silence, they let it gain traction. It became the most watched network, spreading disinformation in ways that is so harmful to democracy.
And the thing about Fox News also that people I think you need to understand is when it started, it was kind of a conservative news outlet, but it was more of a legitimate news outlet. It was trying to cover stories. It was having more Democrats on, and it was trying to cover both sides a little bit and be fairer. And it gradually, part of its nefarious mission was that gradually it became more and more this right wing advocacy and just flat out lies. And right now, and the thing that real people, this is also has not gotten enough coverage. It was kind of a one day story when it was revealed that Fox News's major stars and Rupert Murdoch knew that what they were putting on the air was lies, knew that they were lying about, they were promoting the big lie, while privately they were saying, boy, these people are crazy. These people, I just caught them in a lie. And these people are nuts. But they're putting them on the air and acting on the air like they have legitimate grievances.
And that's the thing. They're acting. It's not news. Mark Jacob, I appreciate it. We've run up against the bump here, but actually, you want to hang on for 2 seconds here? We'll let you finish your thought.
No, I just want to say that they keep on talking about the East Coast elite and stuff like that. They are the East Coast elite.
Exactly.
They are conning the rubes. That's what they think they're doing.
Exactly. All right, Mark, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you.
All right. Back with Dan Schumacher next. You're up north. Oh, it just occurs to me, Dan Schumacher, that I checked in with you like I always do to find out what Grateful Dead song you want to hear on Fridays, and you gave me one, and I forgot to pass it along to Aaron. So I don't know what Aaron did. Actually, could you catch what Aaron was playing there?
I didn't catch it. But...
Aaron, can you bring it back up, or is it gone?
Yep. Fire on the Mountain.
There we go. That's it. And that is Name That Tune with Dan Schumacher. Name That Grateful Dead Tune. How are you this week? This is a busy one for you.
It really is. It's been constantly trying to rearrange schedules because of this storm. So,
yes,
you know, technically we were supposed to play basketball Wednesday and Thursday night and playoff basketball, but it did not work. So we had to move it to Friday, Saturday. Along with wrestling was moved. Hockeys are going to be fine because they were set to play across the state on Friday night and Saturday, so we were good there. Everything got pushed or moved to a new date, new time, and as long as there was no new location, because people were objecting to changing home field advantage of just to get around the storm.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I mean, just look at the hullabaloo in the NFL. If the AFC Championship were to have been played on a neutral site, that, you know, people want their home field advantage, and they'll wait a day or something to get it. But, you know, it's again a reminder that behind the scenes, beyond the athletic talent of the folks on the team, there are logistics and folks that have to do that don't get nearly attention they should until something like this comes up. So this storm comes up, and you're up on the Chippewa River, you know, not too far from Jim Falls. And I was asking you if anybody was ice fishing out there on that stretch of the river, and you're telling me no, it's actually more like a recreational trail.
It is that you don't see too many people up here fishing. You might see them down a little bit, a couple blocks down the water here, but I see mostly cross-country skiers and snowmobilers are whip up here just to get to the edge of the water where it opens up north of here and then turn around and come back. So,
to which I can say, come on, man.
I've also seen planes, though, Pat. I've seen planes land in front on skis.
Yes, we do have a couple of planes like that here. You had the Jigs Up ice fishing tournament as well.
Yeah, record day, and mm-hmm. I attribute that to the weather. I mean, we doubled our kids fishing tournament to it. People from around the state came. Somebody from New Berlin, Wisconsin, won the truck. There was prize winners from Rhinelander to Madison. It really has become an attraction statewide for people to come from all over, which fills up the hotels and is good for economic development here with the chambers.
Yeah, exactly. Let's look over at college basketball quick before I lose my train of thought. Marquette, 10th ranked in the nation. They will be hosting DePaul tomorrow evening at 6:30. The Badger men's basketball team is going to be playing in Michigan. That's on Sunday at 1:00. We are getting very close to conference tournaments and to March Madness. And everybody says the Badgers are, you know, like one of the first four out.
Yeah,
I don't know if they can.
They got a good win this week. They beat Iowa, so mm-hmm. that was a good win for them to get kind of put things back on track. And if they can get something at Michigan, is it Michigan or Michigan State? Do they have
Michigan?
Oh, that's always fun because Juwan and Guard don't exactly get along.
Oh, that's right. They got had that incident last. That was last season, wasn't it?
It was, and they played at the Kohl Center, and everything was fine. But they, you know, they were just playing fake friends, as I always put it. So, but it's a big week for everybody's conference room. You know, what they've done down at Marquette with Shaka, he's done a great job. I mean, he's won everywhere he's gone. He's, no matter how small of Division I, you know, low, mid-major he's been at, he's won, and he brought that game to Marquette. And look at what he's doing at Marquette. I'm sure I was listening the other day to somebody talking about, well, would he go to the Badgers if there was a change? And no, I don't think so. I don't think McIntosh is going to make a change with Guard. I think Guard is going to get another season.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's turn to the NBA and, as I like to call it, wristwatch. After Giannis Antetokounmpo injured his wrist about a week ago, and I guess he was practicing yesterday. It was lightly taped, but we won't find out until about 5:30 tonight whether he'll take part in a 6:30 game. And I mean, is there any way to get around so much attention over one wrist on one athlete? I mean, when you're riding a 12 game winning streak, so I guess every little thing, a hangnail, would do it.
Well, he's MVP. I mean, you're talking about the MVP of the NBA, or at least one of the one, two, or three people that are probably that stick out the most. The way they were playing like they were on fire and ready to go and ready to win another NBA championship. So it's no different to me than waiting to see when Aaron Rodgers comes out of darkness. Okay.
Well, so that's the other thing. Apparently, those were the headlines yesterday that he's emerged from his cocoon again. Who cares? But
I know.
But he did. So we get to.
Did
hear
you
that
see the video of it? Have you seen the video?
No. Was there video?
There's video out there from the owner of the place in Oregon where he went.
Oh God.
And there is lights inside the cabin. He's just choosing not to have them on or something. I don't know what the whole deal is, but somebody took a camera in there and they interviewed the owner of the place that he, because the owner was the one who divulged to the media that he has now been released from darkness.
Did he see his shadow? I mean, come on.
Yeah, what did I see the joke? Yeah, he saw his shadow, and Green Bay will not have a Super Bowl for 12 months.
Unbelievable. Six more weeks of pointless questions about will he or won't he. So let's get to something much more in the here and now. Spring training baseball, the games begin tomorrow. Brewers are playing the Dodgers, and you being a Southsider,
No, I'm you're a South Side, but North
South Sider, but a North Side fan. There we go. I got it right there. Have you made your have you looked at the calendar yet and identified the first Cubs games you're going to? After all, the Brewers open the season at Wrigley Field at the end of March.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet, but I will. I'm going to try to see. They occasionally have played the Twins, the Cubs and Twins play. So I've been interested in going over and seeing. I've not been to the Target Field.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of interested to try to find it. I'm not too appealed to go watch the White Sox too much, especially last year. But if the Cubs are playing the Twins, if there's that crossover of those divisions, I definitely will try to make it there. But if not, there'll be sometime in the summer I'll make it to Wrigley Field.
Wait a minute.
Outside of the Grateful Dead concerts.
So you want, of course. So you want to be one of those annoying Cubs fans at the visitors ballpark. Like the way that American
I'm not
Family
an
Field,
fan, but I will wear my Cubs jersey.
Okay,
probably my Mark Grace or Ryan Sandberg one, but Cub fans are everywhere.
Yes, they are. No doubt.
They're everywhere.
Dan Schumacher, thanks so much. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right. Take care. Yep. Coming up on Monday, it'll be another edition of Motherhood Monday, where we'll talk to the folks from Motherhood for Good, and they will talk about what busy moms need to know about all of the school board elections happening around Wisconsin on April 4th. Again, remember, you can follow me on Facebook. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. That's Kreitlow. Up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba across the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Monday.